Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Do you remember meeting your husband or wife?
Davey, get over here. Come here. And I go over, and he's at the merch table. He's still setting up. But there's a girl there, a girl who was leaving the earlier show, and she's buying one of everything. She's buying a Found magazine, my book, The Lone Surfer of Montana, Kansas. I'm trying to understand it. She's not even there for our event. I sort of been piecing this together. She's leaving this other thing, but she just sees the table and starts, like, that stuff's cool.
Wow, that is really sweet. It sounds like a beautiful beginning.
I had an instant crush on her. You know, you have that instant attraction, and I was like, this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my life. Like, not just her physical beauty, but her curiosity and energy, you know, her openness to, like, being down to stay for some event she had never heard of before.
Okay, so what could go wrong?
I guess I came to realize that she had a pretty serious boyfriend. And so, you know, as friendly and as wonderful as she'd been, you know, her ability to really leap into anything was obviously limited.
Oh, that's tricky. Today on Storyworthy, author, creator, and host of the Found podcast, Davey Rothbart, talks about how he met his wife. Stay close.
Hey, this is Davey Rothbart from the Found podcast and Found magazine. You're listening to my homegirl, Christine Blackburn, on Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Wondery Sunset Studio in West Hollywood, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with comedian Sarah Colonna and her story ending a friendship. Now, that was an intense story, and it was super honest. And it, you know, it happens as adults where you have to end a friendship. It's hard. It's like a, you know, ending any relationship, breaking up, right? So definitely, you guys, go back and listen to that. But not now. Not now, because you need to stay with me, because today I'm here with the amazing Davey Rothbart, who literally, you guys, this guy, he seems to do it all, okay? He's an author, he's a film junkie, and he's the founder of Found Magazine and now the Found Podcast, which is one of the reasons why we're here at Sunset Studio. Now, if you guys aren't familiar with Found, it started way back in 2001, and essentially it's a collection of Found stuff, like love letters, kids' homework, birthday cards, to-do lists, ticket stubs, anything, receipts, doodles, anything that gives you a glimpse into somebody else's life. And you obviously know that I love stories, and I know you guys like stories. And that's where I think Found is so fascinating, because it's like every little scrap of paper has like a story behind it. And I have been a huge fan of the magazine. I've told Davey this before. I've been a huge fan for at least 10, 12 years. And the magazine, it still comes out. It's only $5. And I'm going to tell you something. For $5, you guys, there is so much entertainment value in this magazine. And I told Davey this before. I used to buy it and give it to people like as a housewarming gift. You know what I mean? Like, I'd buy like 5 or 10 and just have them sitting around my apartment so that when I went to somebody's house, instead of taking wine, I would take them a Found magazine. So anyway, I'm really excited to sit here with Davey and to talk with him because I am such a fan. Now, he brings forth the topic today, meeting my wife. And I definitely look forward to hearing this. Lee Keckner told a story a few years ago called How I Met My Husband, and it got a ton of downloads. So I have high expectations for this, Davey. Now, as most of you guys know, I've been married twice. So I met two husbands in my life. Sergio, how many wives have you met? None. He's holding up the zero sign. Here's the thing. When you meet the person that you think, you know, that it's going to happen, there is something about it. First of all, there has to be an attraction. Like, you have to want to jump their bones big time. Because if you're going to make this last, and it's the last person you're ever going to sleep with, you know, this is it, it better be good. And sex is no better sex than the first sex, the beginning sex, the ramp up, as you will. Anyway, so that definitely is part of meeting your spouse. You got to have that strong attraction, I believe. Now, my first husband I met in a bar. I was in college. I was 19. He was 31. Is that disgusting? I'm like with a fake ID, and he's 31. So it's not like, what was I doing looking for him? What was a 31-year-old looking for a 19-year-old? It's disgusting. But I married the guy. Well, there was a lot of sexual attraction, Davy Rothbart. My second husband I met out here in L.A. At a coffee shop doing stand-up. And he was very funny, I'll say that. So that, but it didn't last. But again, there was that attraction. So that, I have a feeling I'm going to hear about that with your story. There's probably something there. Probably.
Hey, you guys, before I forget, save the date for Saturday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Improv for Storyworthy's 7th year anniversary show. We're going to be playing Shotgun Storyworthy with 6 fabulous storytellers and 3 celebrity judges. You don't want to miss it. It's going to sell out. Tickets are only $10, so head over to hollywood.improv.com, and I'll see you there Saturday, July 29th. Happy anniversary to me.
Anyway, you guys, I'm not going to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy because I know you already do that, right? Right. Okay, good. And also, I don't know if you've been over to StoryworthyPodcast.com lately, but there's activity going on there. So go there, right? Yes? See? I'm done bothering you. It didn't hurt or anything, did it? All right, you guys, let's get to our storyteller right now. Davy Rothbart, like I said, he just does everything. He's the creator of Found Magazine, like I said, and the Found podcast right here at Wondery. And he also co-directed and produced the documentary Medora. And I thought that was just stunning. It's a documentary about these inner city kids and their basketball team. And I was just so impressed by that film, Davy. I have to tell you, I feel like you are a born filmmaker. I mean, you do all these other things. You have a really strong talent toward film. Davy's also been a frequent contributor to public radio's This American Life and is the best-selling author of My Heart is an Idiot, which is a book of personal essays, and A Lone Surfer of Montana, Kansas, which is also a collection of stories. Now, for years, I also understand you taught creative writing at Cotton Correctional Facility in Jackson, Michigan. And that impressed me. And you have this amazing, wonderful organization called Washington to Washington, where you and other volunteers take these inner city kids out of the cities like D.C., New Orleans, and Detroit, and you hike mountains with them. I'm just thrilled about that. I'm amazed by that. I'm looking at that website. I'm like crying. What? Really? Just tremendous. I was so impressed. And now Davy has also written for GQ Magazine, New York Magazine, Maxim and the Sun, also Los Angeles Magazine. And he's appeared on David Letterman's show a couple of times and has been featured on 2020, MSNBC, and also in The New Yorker and The New York Times. Plus, Davy is a skilled interviewer, and he always brings out the best in your guests. You really do. You give people the chance to talk, and I should let you talk. That's what I should do. You can find Davy over at DavyRothbart.com and also at FoundMagazine.com and on Twitter at Davy Rothbart. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Davy Rothbart.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you so much. It's so awesome to be here. I have been a fan of your show for a long time, and so to be a guest on your show is really a dream come true. Thank you. I thought it would be fun to share with you the story of how I met my wife. Her name is Margaret, and it's actually a story I've never really told that. You know, I've probably here and there little bits and pieces, but I've never really sat down with someone like this and just shared the whole story. And I this morning I told her she was leaving the house and I told her I was going to come on your podcast. And she was like, oh, Storyworthy. That's cool. What are you going to talk about? What story are you going to tell? I was like, well, actually the story about meeting you. And she's I wouldn't say she's shy, not like in person when you meet her, but I guess I just haven't like, you know, I haven't gone deep and shared the story, and I'm sure she would have her own version of it, you know, but I'll try to share the story because it's obviously one that has a lot of personal meaning to me. So this was about 12 years ago in 2005, and, you know, I make this magazine called Found Magazine. It's all notes and letters that people find on the ground, find on the street, love letters, to-do lists. You know, you talked about this in your intro, and people send us these incredible finds from all over the country, and we just put them together into these Found magazines and Found books. And now, of course, you know, the website and the Found podcast, which is also here on Wondery. And so for years, over 10 years, every year, my brother Peter and I, we would do a tour around the country. We would do kind of a live Found show where I would read some of my favorites of these notes and letters that people had sent us, stuff that, you know, was in the Found magazines and in the Found books. And my brother, who's a great musician, Peter, he would play songs based on some of these Found notes. And it was just kind of a lively, energetic reading and music show. And, you know, this would be at bars and bookstores and cafes, sometimes a small theater. And we would just have a blast. And the best thing was people would bring us finds at the end of the show, and we'd meet people, you know, this kind of community of kindred spirits, people who are also interested in found stuff and shared our curiosity about other people's lives. Because it can be really magical to, you know, find a note on the ground and get a little peek into somebody else's life. So we would do these massive tours. Me and my brother would get in a van. Usually another friend or two would ride along with us, and we'd go all over the country. I mean, sometimes we did, in 2004, we did a 50-state tour where we went to 136 cities over the course of 8 months. So we really cruise around a lot. And of course, one of my favorite things was, you know, not just sort of spreading the gospel of Found. You know, Found is a community art project. It's a sort of, you know, it requires the participation of thousands of people finding stuff and giving it to us. So we'd meet people who would give us their finds, but also we would just make friends and meet cool folks. You know, the people who were into Found were people that we would naturally become really great friends with. And we've made lifelong friends on the road, you know, whether it's like a bookseller in Richmond, Virginia, this guy Ward Teft would have us at his bookstore Chop Suey, or maybe it would be, you know, somebody who worked at a radio station in Seattle. This woman, Ann Dornfeld, met her doing an interview like this and hit it off. And, you know, years later, I'm at her wedding, you know, and you know, just those friendships have been really important. But probably most important of all was a friendship that came out of one particular night in Austin, Texas. And I think it was 2005. We were doing a show at the Alamo Drafthouse. Now the Alamo Drafthouse is now a chain of movie theaters, kind of art house cinemas. But this is when they only had one theater, and this was the original location was in downtown Austin, just off of 6th Street. And, you know, it's kind of one of those movie theaters where they also serve drinks and food. And so we're kind of like setting up, and at the time my friend Javon was on the road with us, and also my friend David Micklejohn. And so Javon was setting up like the merch table where we put out all of our like Found magazines and books and stuff. And David and I were unloading stuff from the car, bringing it up. Peter was doing the sound. You know, Peter always sets up our sound system, the microphones and his guitars and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I remember Javon, you know, and of course, there was some other event that was letting out. So there's a stream of people, you know, waiting to come into the theater for the Found event, but also a ton of people are just kind of leaving whatever event was before us. And I hear Javon calling my name, Davey, get over here, come here. And I go over, and he's at the merch table. He's still setting up, but there's a girl there, a girl who was leaving the earlier show, and she's buying one of everything. She's buying a Found magazine, my book, The Lone Surfer of Montana, Kansas. And look, like, you know, usually after our events, people have heard me ranting and raving for an hour and heard Peter play his beautiful music. It's no surprise for people to want to, you know, buy one of his CDs, buy a book or magazine. But to have somebody who, you know, and I'm trying to understand it. She's not even there for our event. I sort of been piecing this together. She's leaving this other thing, but she just sees the table and starts, it's like, that stuff's cool. So Javon's like, I think you should really talk to this girl. And he had told her, well, look, the author of that book is standing right there. So he pulled me over and introduced me. Her name was Margaret. So I started talking to her briefly. And of course, we have a lot of things to do to set up for our show. So I just said, well, you're awesome. Thank you for checking all this stuff out. You know, why don't you stay for our show? Like, you know, check it out. And so she said, oh, yeah, I guess I can do that. Her friend had to take off, but she hung around. And we had a great show, same as normal. You know, I have a few drinks and, you know, read all these great Found notes. And they are really funny. Some of them are really heartbreaking. You know, they really run the full range of human emotion. And we have so much fun at our live events. And afterwards, Javon and my friend David, they each had a few friends in Austin as well. So we said, well, let's all go out. Let's go to a diner. And I invited Margaret to come along with us. And of course, I had an instant crush on her. And you nailed it. You know, you have that instant attraction. And I was like, this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen in my life. Like, and she just, not just her physical beauty, but her curiosity and energy, you know, her openness to like being down to stay for some event she had never heard of before, you know, I thought was cool. And so invited her to the diner. I was talking to her a little bit, but there was also a bunch of other friends there. And you know, maybe 10 of us hanging out. And here's the funny thing, that there was a to-do list. This was a Found to-do list. Somebody had just found this on the street in Texas a few years before. And it said at the top, shit that has to be done. And shit that has to be done. And it was stuff like have a sword fight, shoot an AK-47, play drums on an airplane, A wild list of, you know, like 30 things. Go to graveyard at night, ride on the roof of some car, and you know, someone's sort of awesome, fantastic to-do list. And my friends, Peter, my brother, and my friends, Javon and David, we had decided over the course of this tour, we were going to try to do every single thing on that list. And we had knocked out about half of them, but we still had a few more to go. So after the diner, we said, well, hey, why don't we try to do some of these things? And so we kind of went to some of the neighborhoods. Margaret said, yeah, you know, I'll roll with you guys, which is kind of cool. She had no friends there with her. You know, she was just rolling solo with a bunch of maniacs. But I remember one of the things was ride on the roof of some car. And so Margaret had like a older, like white Jeep Cherokee. She's like, well, I'll drive, and this thing's pretty sturdy. You know, you could probably pile 8 or 9 of you guys on the hood and the roof. And so we did that, and just for, you know, a minute or two up and down the block. But then, you know, go to a graveyard at night. It said climb on the roof of some building, and one of our friends was like, oh, we could go to the cafe where I work. There's a really high roof with a cool view. Let's go up there. And, you know, so it was just cool how Margaret came and, you know, was down to roll the whole night. And here and there, I got a chance to talk to her just a little bit. Like, I rode in her car from one spot to the next. And she told me she was from Dallas area. She said she had graduated college at Hendricks College in Arkansas. And she was telling me stories about working at a gas station. Her college job was, like, you know, the night shift at a gas station in rural Arkansas. And I don't know. I think I just have a, maybe you could call it a fetish, but it's just kind of like, some of the more remote parts of our country, whenever I met people from there, male or female, I was always kind of fascinated to hear the stories. And it's not like I'm from some major metropolis. I grew up on a dirt road in Michigan, but I just was always curious about people. You know, Arkansas seemed really exotic and amazing to me. Like, some people might want to meet someone from Paris or Rome or something. I was like, oh my God, this girl has been living in Arkansas the last few years. That's incredible. And so I was, you know, at the end of the night, I was like, well, maybe we could stay in touch or something. And I was already, you know, had a serious infatuation with her, but I was trying to play it cool. Basically, she wrote down her phone number on a little scrap of paper, her email address, and, you know, maybe gave her a little hug as she drove off into the night in her Jeep Cherokee. And I didn't know if I'd ever see her again, but the next morning, this is something Javon actually has reminded me years later. I had forgotten this, but Javon said that the next morning, as we kind of piled into the van and headed for our next stop, New Orleans, I said, you know what, Javon, like, I'm going to marry that girl someday. I want to just settle down with her in a little tiny town somewhere and just have a nice life. And, you know, he, you know, to be fair, he had probably heard that from me before, like probably the for dozens of previous mornings, you know, whoever I might have met the night before, that had also, you know, seemed to have like special energy themselves. But I really meant it, and I knew there was something special. I got home from tour a couple months later. I dropped her an email, you know, kind of, she wrote back a pleasant note, but it wasn't over the top. And I guess I came to realize that she had a pretty serious boyfriend. And so, you know, as friendly and as wonderful as she'd been, you know, her ability to really leap into anything was obviously limited. But a few months later, I had a chance to go down to Austin for a GQ article I was working on writing. And I thought it would kind of give me a great excuse to get to see her. And here's what the GQ piece was about. This is kind of weird, but a couple years before, I'd been in a motel room and a phone call came in the middle of the night, and it was some woman that wanted to have phone sex. I'd never done that before. It was pretty crazy, but it was kind of awesome. And over the months that followed, I started this like ongoing phone sex relationship with this woman where she would call whenever she felt. I didn't have her number. It was like, you know, blocked or whatever, but she would call me periodically. We would have phone sex, and then we'd actually talk about our real lives. It became almost like a real close friendship connection. So I told one of my editors at GQ about this, and they were like, you have to go really meet this woman, Nicole. And so the reason I went back to Austin was for this, you know, that's where Nicole lived, was to actually meet Nicole in person. So I didn't explain to her why I was there, but I was excited to see her. I met up with her and some of her friends, and the vibe was great. Like, she was just being super friendly, super cool, and I was thrilled. I was really excited. Like, I was like, oh my God, this seems really, really promising. And I was drinking. She was probably drinking. A friend of mine was playing a folk concert in a hotel. It was part of some conference that night, my friend Devin Sproul. And I thought, well, this would be a great thing to bring Margaret to, because Devin herself is really talented and beautiful and awesome. And, you know, I can show her that I have, like, cool friends and stuff like that. And maybe I got a little carried away, but during the concert, she seemed into it. I was super into it. We were just talking and, like, enjoying ourselves. And I took her hand. I just got caught up in the moment, and I took her hand. And she looked at it like it was maybe like a piece of roadkill, like it was like a dead mouse. And she just kind of looked at it, considered it, and just stuck it back on my own lap. I was totally brokenhearted. And I realized just how much I'd kind of gotten myself wound up for seeing her again. And we're walking down the street. It was a little awkward, but not that awkward. You know, we were being friendly. And I just kind of confessed and told her why I'd come to Austin in the first place. I told her about this GQ article on the phone sex thing. She thought it was hilarious. And you know, we left on a good note, even though I was still disappointed that we couldn't be together. She was dating someone. A year later, I was back in Texas for another GQ piece. This was I was trying out for the NBA D League. They actually gave me an invite to try out, not because I'm such a big basketball star. I think they probably just wanted some publicity for the new D League. It had just started. So Austin's not on the way to Houston, but I made it sound like I had to come through Austin for some other reasons and just wanted an excuse. You know, I knew she had maybe recently broken up with that guy that she had been with the last time I was there. So I thought, all right, well, this will be a chance. She was writing me very friendly emails. She was like, I'd love to hang out. That's awesome. You'll be in town. Just pick me up such and such time. So I rolled in there, you know, I'm like trying to look fly and like brush my teeth and get all excited for this date of the lifetime. Because I really, you know, a couple years had passed now since I first met her, but I had a special feeling about her. So I rolled up there and she's there with another new boyfriend, this other guy. And I'm picking her up to go out for our grand date so we can begin our relationship together. And she's there with this guy. So we went out to a bar. Again, I was disappointed. I mean, you know, how many times can you go through such heartbreak? Even though, you know, the truth is, it's not like I really knew her that well or, you know. But I felt like, I don't know, I thought it was a date and she thought it was just, you know, that we were just friends. And to be fair, maybe I said some things early on that, you know, made it seem like I wasn't romantically interested. I didn't want to put pressure on her in that way. But I did try to hold her hand that one time, so she should have known. Anyways, we went out. I was very friendly with her boyfriend. He was a nice guy. But I was like, this is never going to happen. You know, I remember driving through the night to Houston, could barely stay awake, and was like, it's time to give up. Well, a funny thing happened. The following year, I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because this Hollywood filmmaker read my article about this phone sex relationship that I was having with Nicole and decided he wanted to make a movie about it. And he did make a movie. It's called Easier with Practice. And so he invited me to come to the set of Easier with Practice to watch this actor, Brian Garrity, plays Davey in the movie. And he's the guy in the Hurt Locker. He's not Jeremy Renner or Anthony Mackie. He's the third dude who kind of gets injured in the Hurt Locker. He's in Flight, where he plays with Denzel Washington, and he's a really cool guy and a great actor. But here he is. I'm watching him like have phone sex in a motel room, like playing out these scenes from my own life. It was super trippy, and my phone rings. It's Margaret, and of course it was usually me that would, you know, check in with her, email her, call her every 6 months or something, but I'm like, oh, I got a nice voicemail from her. And I missed the call. I remember the voicemail. And she was like, hey, give me a call sometime. I'd love to hear from you. And I was like ecstatic. And I remember I told Cookie Carosello, was the producer of Easier With Practice. I was like, Margaret, holy shit, Margaret called me. What? And I told her all about her. And I was like, all right, getting up the nerve to call her back. And I went and called her back. And I was standing in the office of this motel, and this is like an abandoned motel that's just being used as a set for the movie. But it's weird because I'm in a motel that's in the movie playing the motel where I had phone sex with some crazy stranger in Austin, you know, coincidentally, but talking to Margaret now in Austin, and And I kind of told her where I was and how funny it was. And she was like, yeah, well, me and that guy broke up, you know. She was like, you know what? The thing I've realized is I'm just kind of a serial monogamist. I just keep, you know, dating. You know, as soon as I break up with someone, I just sort of immediately fall into a relationship with somebody else. And she was like, you know, I think I need to just, like, take some time off. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, and I was just giving her advice as a friend. You know, I was just like, you know, sometimes it's important to just, you know, see who you are, not in a relationship, and just take some time off. And then I kind of thought for a second. I was like, you know, it's funny. I'm going to New York next weekend. Why don't you come out to New York and we'll run around and have a ball? She was like, that sounds great. Let's do it. So basically, this was the one opening I was ever going to get to be with her. This is one. She's not dating anybody. She's just out of a relationship. I went in. And so she came to New York. We had an amazing weekend. We had such a fun time. I still didn't know if I thought she was just like coming as a friend, and the first 24 hours were kind of petrifying. And my friend Amanda, who was my editor at Simon & Schuster, we had lunch with her. And when Margaret was in the bathroom, I was like, I'm so into her. Like, and she was like, yeah, she's awesome. She's so cool. She's so smart. She's so funny. And I was like, yeah, I just don't know if she likes me. She was like, I did fly to New York to hang out with you for like 4 days. Like, I think you have a chance. I was like, all right, I hope so. And later that night, went out to dinner with actually Alex Bloomberg, who's runs Gimlet, a great podcast network, and my friend Kel O'Neill, who was an actor who played my brother in the Easier with Practice movie. We went out with Kel and his wife, and Alex Bloomberg and his wife, and you know, at one moment Margaret walked away, and Kel was like, pro tip. He was like, instead of taking the subway home back to Manhattan, we were in Dumbo in Brooklyn, he said, just walk across the Manhattan Bridge. He's like, it's a beautiful view. It's just, he's like, just that's the place for a first kiss. Took his advice. It went well. I was so nervous. I was like almost across the bridge, and I was like, oh man, it's now or never. So I did. I was a little awkward about it, but it worked out. She actually kissed me, and we had a great weekend. And here's a funny thing I remember. At the end of the weekend, you know, we just, you know, I was like so thrilled. This girl that, you know, had been massively curious about and wanting to get to know better, and just having this sort of special feeling about for so long. But I, you know, I still was trying to play it cool. I didn't want to say too much. And so on the way to the airport, I was actually going to drop her she was flying out of JFK. I was flying out of LaGuardia. So we took a cab. This was back in the days of cabs and stuff. So took her to JFK, and the whole time, instead of talking to her, I think I was talking to the Senegalese cab driver, because he was really interesting and was telling his life story. And then we got to the airport, and I kind of got out of the cab and hugged her goodbye. And the cab driver was out with us, kind of helping us pull the bags out of the trunk. And he said to her, goodbye, I love you, I'll see you, I love you, bye-bye. And so, like, I always tell her that the first time I told her I loved her, I didn't actually say it. The cab driver he must have maybe thought we were married, maybe thought we'd been together much longer, but he actually was the one that said, I love you and everything. And then, of course, I spent the rest of the ride going to LaGuardia telling him how much I was into her, telling him the whole story, and he thought it was pretty interesting. Anyways, what began then, you know, was a long-distance relationship. I was living in Michigan, she was in Texas, but, you know, I would go down to Dallas, and it was funny, she moved to Dallas. Sometimes I would drive her car around, and it was that white Jeep Cherokee, and it was always interesting to, you know, be driving that car that I remembered from the first night, riding on the roof and the hood of it. And after a few years of long distance, we moved out to LA together, and I flew to Texas, helped her drive, and I remember driving that car through these beautiful roads in like Arizona. We took some back highways and New Mexico, and just being like, this is so crazy. Like, now I'm in that same car and I'm driving this out there. And so we've been living together here in LA, and we just got married last fall. And what's hilarious is Javon was one of the first friends that we called after we got engaged. And Javon said, he's like, you know, what's funny is, like, I remember the first night that you guys met, you know, the next morning you said, I want to move with that girl to some tiny town somewhere and live a nice life. I was like, well, we moved to the tiny town of Los Angeles. Not long ago, Kel O'Neill, the guy who was the one who suggested where to, you know, I could kiss her for the first time on the Manhattan Bridge. Him and his wife were moving to LA from New York, and there was an apartment open in our building. So we hooked it up. Kel now and his wife Elena are our neighbors, and they just had their second kid. And so it's kind of nice to see, you know, the person who kind of put me up to this first kiss, you know, get to see them every day as our neighbors. So, you know, everything is tied back together, and Margaret's a really amazing person. And I just feel so lucky. It really speaks to the serendipity, I mean, of how, you know, what falling in love can be. And look, I'm someone who I wrote a book called My Heart is an Idiot, and it was about my trials and tribulations in love. Probably should have started with that. But, you know, this is not something that came easily for me. I had a lot of misfires and a lot of trial and error, you know, for many, 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 many years. And so, you know, but it is so random. I mean, look, if I had not been standing right there when she was at the table, you know, if I had been down at the van instead of being up there, I would have, you know, she might have bought a couple things and took off. I would have never met her, you know, if Javon hadn't had the presence of mind to like call me over and, you know, make sure I got to say hi to her. And if she hadn't have had her openness, I mean, that this more speaks to who she is, but she had the openness to hang out with a bunch of random strangers that she had never met before and spend the night, you know, getting to know us. You know, we would have never been together now. So, you know, I don't know. It's so hard to meet that one special someone. And I don't know. Sometimes when you look at the amount of serendipitous, you know, things that have to come together, it's almost seems like a miracle, you know?
David Rothbard, that is such a beautiful story. It's a love story.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's funny. I've never really told that story before. I've probably told bits and pieces, maybe, but I've never really shared the whole story. I filibustered a little bit there, but
listen, it was an absolutely beautiful story. You must have questioned yourself though over the years, in terms of like every time you turned around, she had a new boyfriend.
Yeah. I mean, I did feel like I think at some point I kind of gave up. I think on the last visit there, I was just like, well, this probably isn't going to happen. But on the same token, I think the stakes felt high enough to me to make it worth some. I would just call it gentle persistence. And I also would say I'm always someone that sees the long game, you know. And I think I wasn't when I first met her. Like I wasn't in a rush. I wasn't like,
well,
I desperately need this instant. I probably felt that way, but I was also just like, you know what? I'll wait as long as it takes.
That is so beautiful. But also you weren't in that place because you were traveling.
Yeah,
you weren't in the same city.
True.
It really wasn't meant to be at that time.
Yeah.
And if you guys had tried to rush it or you could move to Austin or push it,
true.
Then it, you know, and she might have just had to get those things out.
Totally.
And then that moment that she said, you know, it seems like I keep going from relationship to relationship and maybe I should take a break. And then you stepped up and said, well, you know what? That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I remember.
That sounds like a moment that might have shifted things.
I might have even given her that advice and said, I might have been the one that planted that seed and said, you know what? Maybe you should consider like just taking a few months off and, you know, and then in the same like, you know, like flurry of speech, I invited her to New York to like not take time off. And
I made a note here that New York, there is no funner place to be with a new date or to run around that city.
I mean,
what a blast.
It is funny to think about it. I mean, our first date was 4 days in New York. So that, you know, going to Central Park.
Do you remember where you stayed?
Yeah. We stayed at my friend Devin and Danielle's apartment.
Nice.
They were in the West Village. They were very nice to, they were out of town, but they're very generous in letting us stay in a beautiful apartment. Went to Central Park. Actually, one very memorable part of that weekend was my aunt and uncle, Muriel and Frank, lived in Coney Island, Brooklyn. And they were in their 80s, you know, and I hadn't seen them for a few years. And I didn't even have their phone number. Or maybe I left a message and, you know, it's like a landline, didn't get a response. But we just decided to show up there and just see if we could see them. And this was a funny thing because Frank, you know, we had kissed maybe once, but Frank, who was this like older artist and art professor, you know, now in his 80s, kind of gave us a wry, mischievous smile. And he was like, so what's up with you guys? Are you guys like dating? Or is you guys just like a boyfriend girlfriend things?
Yeah.
And obviously we've been hanging out for like 36 hours.
Yeah.
And I think I just said, well, I hope one day. I hope
that's
one
so
day.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that you wanted to introduce her to family at all, that's really meaningful.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys met, there were no cell phones, or were there cell phones? Because you never talked about texting.
There was cell phones, but there wasn't. I wouldn't say texting was a big thing. Yeah.
Sex was a big thing. Yeah. But not same.
Yeah. Exactly.
So this whole phone sex thing, it was made into a movie.
Yeah. It was made into a movie called Easier with Practice. The director is Kyle Patrick Alvarez. He's gone on to make some great movie team. He was the first one to make a David Sedaris-based film.
Oh,
it's called COG. He had a movie last year called the Stanford Prison Experiment. And then he actually directed many episodes from 13 Reasons Why, which is a great new series on
Netflix. But did you have any contributions to that movie, or did he just buy that out from you? He just said, I want to use that story.
Yeah, he just really loved the story. You know, it was kind of a... It's an interesting story of acceptance. There's some weird twists, and when I finally met Nicole, you know, it was sort of a fascinating experience. But you know, people can watch the movie. No spoilers. But I will say, Kyle was attracted to that. You know, now Kyle's one of my very best friends, and he was there at our wedding. But at the time, we really didn't know each other that well. So I think the story and the character Davey in the movie is not really meant to be me so much. It's a mix of Kyle, me, and some fictional characters.
So when you met Nicole, the first thing that comes to mind is, was she your age, or was she even close to your age?
Well, I'll just say I knew right away that we weren't really meant for each other, you know, but Nicole has remained a friend, so.
I think that is so fun. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. One time I dubbed French porn.
Uh-huh.
Down at the Flint building on the corner of La Cienega and Wilshire.
What does that mean, dubbed?
Well, you know, when there's pornography in other countries, they need you to dub it in English.
Oh,
not
right.
The moaning and groaning. That's in all languages.
But just some of the dialogue.
Susan,
you would do.
Why are you here again?
Oh, and so you did some of the English dialogue.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, that'd be interesting to
But again,
see.
It really wasn't the sexy talk. Well, there was a couple of lines like, turn me over and fuck me in the ass. That was a little bit different. But
and did you know French so well that you could, or was it translated for you?
No, I was doing the English. No.
Right. But I mean, they had the script for you, basically.
Yeah, there's the
script. I didn't know if you were you weren't sitting there watching and translating. No, but you
No,
were just...
but I was watching the girl's mouth move, so I have to watch this porno in front of the sound engineer guy. Anyway, but I was thinking of your phone sex, and
yeah,
it's different, but something, I'm not sure. How long were you guys engaged, by the way?
We were engaged for... over a year before the wedding. Yeah.
What was your attraction to Arkansas? Why did you find that so glamorous?
Well, I guess I've been curious about some of the desolate parts of our country. You know, like when I lived in New Mexico, there's a movie called Gas, Food, Lodging that I wrote about this in my book, My Heart is an Idiot. But there's this movie about a girl growing up in like a small truck stop town in desolate southern New Mexico. And I don't know why, you know, there's areas not far from where I grew up that have the same kind of
feel.
Yeah,
abandoned
beauty.
Yeah.
And I would kind of romanticize that. And, and you know, if you've been to Arkansas, you know, a lot of, and I barely had ever been there, but you know, it's there's a lot of sadness and decay, but there's also a lot of beauty. And also, I don't know, honestly, I just think people who... you know, look, I have friends and close friends from all over the country, but I do think that there's, you know, there's a closeness that I have with my friends from people from Michigan. You know,
yeah.
I just instantly feel a connection to them, and I think, you know, Arkansas, like Michigan, you know, has been through its ups and downs, and you know, it's just it's a real place. You know?
Well, I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh, and when I meet people from the Midwest, I get an immediate affinity because I know where they're coming from. But as a kid, I would romanticize kids living in Hollywood or Malibu, and I would watch, you know, Three's Company or something like that. And so I was seeing Southern California.
Totally. And I think that's common. Yeah. I'm just kind of a weirdo.
But listen, maybe this is, you know, because you've got such a wonderful spirit, really, and you do this amazing philanthropy with these kids, these inner city kids.
Washington trips.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah, we
just
have a great time on those trips.
Wonderful.
We're gearing up it'll be the 8th year doing it. Taking 45 kids from D.C., Detroit, and New Orleans on a week-long camping and hiking trip. And we always have a blast, and these kids are so awesome.
So that's another example of you find beauty everywhere, and then you create beauty on top of that.
Well, I appreciate that, and I would just say the beauty is out there. You know, yeah. It's just a matter of looking for
it.
You
have to find it,
yep.
as it were.
Yeah, you have to find
it. Like you found your wife. Found. It all comes back to found.
Absolutely.
By the way, what is the font of the Found logo?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. My friend in Found Magazine, we started it in 2001. And then the podcast just a couple years ago, the Found Podcast. But we use the same logo here. My friend Rob Doran was one of my roommates and buddies in Chicago. Now he lives out here in LA too. Really talented artist and musician. And I was like, Rob, you know, what can we do for like some cool logo for like the cover of the magazine? And Rob just whipped up this amazing.
But what is the font?
I maybe he borrowed the font from something that existed, but I think Rob created it.
Really?
Yeah. Rob,
because
I think he hand drew it. He might have had some old stencil or something.
So you don't think there's other letters in the alphabet with that font?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, he just created
those ones.
Yeah. You know, he may have had some stencil that he worked from or something like that.
I was just curious because I was recently up in Morro Bay and Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and they seem to have that font seems to be on all their...
Oh, that kind of... Well, basically, it's, you know, for people who aren't looking at it, I mean, you can go to the Found Magazine website and see it or the Found Podcast and you can see it, check it out. But it's like an old English... I would say lucky thing.
I see
thing,
like
you know?
Bats. I see bats, and I see a lot of serifs.
Yeah.
Like it looks like little bats on.
It is really distinctive. It's pretty.
So there you go.
Eye-catching.
You guys have to go look at the Found logo. That's what you have to do, and look for Davey and so many other wonderful places. Like I said, DaveyRothbart.com. Listen to the Found podcast. It's just stellar, Davey. Congratulations on that.
Thanks so much.
Really, I love it so much.
Well, it's really a pleasure to be a part of your show, and I've been following
so
for a long time. So
you're so sweet. And join me next week to celebrate Storyworthy's 7th year anniversary with actress Wendy McClendon Covey.
The whole time it was happening, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm Frenching, I'm Frenching, I'm Frenching, I'm Frenching.
Don't miss Wendy McClendon Covey talking about her first French kiss next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in today. Let me know what you guys think. And tweet Davey over on Twitter and let him know what you think of his story at Davey Rothbart. And as always, feel free to follow me over there at Storyworthy. And feel free to email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And, of course, thank you to you, Sergio Enriquez. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Davey Rothbart, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Christine.
My name's Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.